All right, Clown Corps, welcome comic fans. It's HVK here, and we got a special comic book review. We are going to review ISOM number 2. And full disclosure, I have been a fan of Eric July's probably since about 2019 when I first found him on YouTube. And I used to watch his stuff quite frequently. I haven't in some time, mostly because I have my own shit going on, so I don't really get to watch a lot of anything, but I really enjoyed his takes on the comic book industry. He's very business literate, I would say, when it comes to a lot of the mistakes they're making, not just from the storytelling and content standpoint, but also the business standpoint as well. And I wanted to lead off with that to kind of just make people aware that yes, this is a review, and yes, I am going to be as objective as possible when it comes to analyzing things like story and certain beats, mistakes, or good steps along the way. But I wanted to give people that heads up, because for whatever reason, and I don't entirely understand this, Eric seems to be a rather radioactive figure to some people, on several different, I guess what I would call, corners of the political spectrum. And maybe it's because philosophically I'm kind of in agreement with him on a fair number of things, but I don't particularly find him to be. I just find him to be somebody who is passionate and speaks his mind. And I think that's refreshing in an era where everybody likes to censor and self-censor, I should say, and kind of hide their true thoughts to be accepted. And frankly, I respect and admire that. Because that's also how I like to live. So I enjoy knowing that there's somebody else out there that does the same thing. So ISOM number 2. Now, I read ISOM number 1 when it came out. I was a backer for his campaign there. And I didn't do a review of it. And there's a reason why. It's because I felt that the first issue, and again, just being totally honest, was a pretty standard, I guess I would say, mid-tier opening affair. And I don't say that to be offensive. I've already said I'm a fan of Eric's. But I felt like he was trying to do a lot of things at once, and saying that it's just, yeah, it's decent is not really a good use of my or anyone else's time. So I always figured I'd talk briefly about ISOM number 1 when the second one was released, and we kind of had a little bit bigger picture. I think that the main problems with the first book is it's focused more on world building rather than the story. I think there's some great characterization, and it does tend to be a little bit of a character-driven story, at least as this first arc goes, and I'll talk about that more when I get into more of ISOM number 2, where it focuses more on Avery and who he is as a person, and you sort of understanding where he is in life, where he's come from, the people around him sort of thing, and the world as it exists in the ISOM Ripaverse, if you will. So not much to say about ISOM 1 that I won't reiterate for ISOM 2, so I'm not really going to get too deep into it. So ISOM number 2, I will say I went with the cover A. I believe this was cover A, the one where ISOM is squaring off with Chadron on the cover, and it has, like, you know, find out why did ISOM quit, and, you know, featuring the first appearances of it. Gave me, like, a really old-school Marvel vibe, right? Like an old-school, like when Hulk fought Wendigo, and it was like the first appearance of Wolverine kind of thing. It just gave me really old school, like Silver Age Marvel vibes, right? So I was like, okay, that's the one. When I was pre-ordering, I'm like, that's the cover. That's the one I want, because that one just looks awesome. It brings me back to when I was first getting into comics myself. So the story continues on with ISOM trying to save this girl, Jasmine, who is like a good friend of the family's, particularly his sister. But it kind of deviates a lot from that. And we get introduced to basically some other, I guess what you would say, villainous entities. And we get a lot of other sort of, I'm going to call them side quests sort of introductions, or perhaps Jasmine is the side quest. It's really hard for me to discern which one is with which, but, you know, the book opens with Avery's sister being confronted by Darren, who we met in the first issue, about her brother kind of coming back into the scene. Avery and Darren and his sister all go way back. We don't entirely know yet the depth of that relationship. We know that Darren's a little bit of a like a cottonmouth figure. If I know most people probably haven't read the Luke Cage comics going all the way back, but think of Cottonmouth from like the Netflix Luke Cage series, where he's, you know, like a gangster businessman basically, and that kind of gives you the idea of what the character sort of harkens towards. But then we go on and we get into this sort of supernatural deviation from what goes on. That's very interesting. I'm kind of a sucker for things that can have a little bit of that spiritual clash. So let me get to the positives here. I think Avery is an interesting character. I think Isom is an interesting character. I think he kind of speaks to my own personal retirement goals, which I think is kind of funny. My goal after I retire from the military is I want to have my own little ranch that's kind of self-sufficient. I want to have a small business that I can run perhaps on there. I'm also a sucker for the reluctant hero archetype, right? I love the idea not of somebody that just wants to charge in there like Superman style and be like, I'm going to, you know, truth, justice, and all that kind of stuff. But sometimes the guy that he just wants to live his life, right? But people come to him because he's reliable, he's trustworthy, he's heroic. And what's really interesting is we actually get a flashback when it says, you know, why did Isom quit? Well, he runs into this villain named Chadron, who seems to be destroying what seems to be some sort of like a Comic-Con or something like that. And we see an Avery that, and the artwork is really good here in portraying it, he's almost got like the Superman-esque sort of thing. The colors are much brighter, and his costume's still the same, but the colors around him are much brighter, and one of the young girls, well, it's a young girl and a young boy, but the young girl ends up dead in this confrontation with Chadron, and he basically doesn't forgive himself for it, but he's got a smile on his face, he's trying to, like, you know, bring hope, right? That's the impression I get before everything just kind of falls to shit because this girl dies, and it's obvious that he blames himself for that and decides that he just needs to retire. But he's coming back out for a very personal reason, but it's obvious that it's going to lead in the direction of he's kind of uniquely equipped to deal with whatever these rising threats are beyond this personal mission of dealing with Jasmine, his sister, Darren, etc. I also find it very interesting that the only discernible sort of iconography on Isom's costume is the cross on his belt, which isn't ever really explained, and I don't think it really needs to be explained at all. I think it's kind of self-explanatory and self-evident in a lot of ways, but I'm curious if we will go to see, and this is a moving forward sort of thing, something that piques my interest to move forward, if you will, is faith going to play a role? You know, it's not uncommon for a lot of heroes. We see it in Common America, for example, that faith plays a role. Soulfinder, another iconic comics title, it's very obvious that, you know, they're Catholic exorcists. It's very obvious that faith plays a role. However, with Isom, in the Common America vein, it's a little less obvious. And I'm curious if it's going to kind of be a little bit of a, like a Daredevil-esque sort of things. One of my most favorite things about Daredevil as a character was the fact that his Catholic faith played a huge role in the character. And it wasn't a preachy role. It was about dictating and guiding his ethics, his morality, his philosophies of both lawyering and being a vigilante. And I'm hoping we see more of that with Isom moving forward. I love the fact that it's a solid all-ages book. I've seen criticisms around the internet about how, oh, you know, the story is simplistic, and the story is a bit disjointed, and, you know, we will get to that, but, you know, it's a solid all-ages book. Again, there's nothing so far in here that is very deep. There are some very positive, role model-esque sort of superhero characteristics you get here. Again, Avery's a very self-reliant person, having his own farm, his own business, etc. A lot of the people are not immediately running to the hero, right? Like, his sister carries a firearm in her purse. Like, she's ready and willing to take care of and handle herself. She's not waiting on some, you know, demigod-like figure to do the saving for her. And I think that's, overall, I personally think that's a positive message. And it's not overly mature that younger kids can't handle it. I know he did a charity campaign with, I believe it was Comics for Kids. I donated a little extra when I ordered mine just to make sure, you know, because I believe that's, you know, I think comics are a great medium for kids, and I think it helps with reading comprehension. I also hope it thinks just with imagination and you know, cognitive skill overall, combining the visual as well as the written word in a lot of ways there. Definitely a plus. As I said, I always enjoy that splash, of like a demonic or like occult hellish threat kind of thing. Again, maybe this is just going back to like my days in the 80s and early 90s with like, you know, the whole like, you know, Satan is in the metal music kind of shit and everything. But I've always been a big fan of Raven. Raven's one of my favorite DC characters. Love Constantine. I really do enjoy that stuff. But I don't enjoy it when it's the focus all the time. That's usually the thing that always kind of drags me away from something like Constantine after a while, is I prefer it more when those sort of supernatural, occult, demonic things are a little bit more in the background, unless it's a story like Soulfinder where they are exorcists. That's clearly what they're going after, right? Like, that's their job. That's explicitly the threats that they're looking for. So for a superhero book, I like it more how the Raven Trigun dynamic, where the demonic side of her is something that she struggles against, but as an actual villainous threat, Trigun only pops up every so often. So we'll see where this whole Hellion thing goes. Again, I'm interested in that. That's something that I actually enjoy. I think the world building is interesting. Accepts don't feel common. Accepts basically being the term he's using for superpowered individuals. I don't want to call them mutants because we haven't really been given a reason why they are accepts or what causes them. Excuse me, but I think it's interesting that they don't necessarily feel uncommon. We're already introduced to a few, right? We have the Alpha Corps. There's three members there. We have Yara. We have Isom himself. We have Chadron, we've been introduced to. And Darren's bodyguard, who I can't remember his name off the top of my head. So we've been introduced to a couple of these things, right? And then, of course, we have Sydney Bloodruth that is magically based, so I don't know if she technically counts as an accept. I know sometimes when it comes to superheroes, right, like Zatanna is not really counted as like a metahuman in DC. Doctor Strange is not considered a mutant, right? Like, he's a magician. It's something different. So I'm not sure if Sydney Bloodruth kind of falls into that category. We get introduced to the what I call the tech hero, right? There's always got to be like a tech hero, right? Named Gooding. Or at least I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly. That's how I pronounce it. He's not really a hero yet. He's kind of like a private security guy that uses a lot of drones. He has what appears to be something approaching some sort of a tech suit that he uses to control a lot of these things. I have a feeling he's probably going to develop into like a little bit like of an Iron Man-esque partner for Avery, but we'll see. I could entirely be wrong. We don't see much of him other than an introduction, as he's the hired security for Avery's ranch. I think Isom uses good use of comics as a visual storytelling medium, and I think it's really well done. There are entire panels, almost entire pages of panels, where it's just a series of images with no verbal narration or narrative boxes, and you can, everything that you need to know is clearly displayed, from the facial expressions of the characters to the movements, as it's obviously supposed to be a rapid succession of panels and everything. I think that's a really good job on the screenplay writing, but the screenplay writing of Eric, as well as the artwork for Cliff Richards and Gabe Eltabe. I know I'm pronouncing that wrong. I think they do a good job of really mixing the two, and I think as a team, they're all kind of in sync with how that sort of works, and you get a lot of really good storytelling that is very show, don't tell, right? He's not telling you that he's apprehensive or whatever. It's just, it's demonstrated on the page. And I really enjoy when comics do that. A big problem with Marvel and DC in the better part of the last 10 years is you get such wordy panels and you have narrative boxes that kind of explain a fight. Like, I don't need to know what you were aiming for when you threw a punch at the guy's face. Like, it's pretty obvious. You threw hands at the guy's face. Anyway. I really enjoy the character designs, particularly Isom, Chadron, and Bloodruth. I love that Bloodruth gets like that old school, like witch, it's like a steampunky witch doctor sort of vibe, right? At first I thought it was just like your basic, like Louisiana voodoo witch doctor kind of vibe, but she's got some very steampunk elements to it. I think all the character designs are great, and it's a little bit of a simpler is better sort of detail, right? And when I say simpler is better, think Batman or Superman, where it's almost in many ways very monochrome, except for a few details. You know, Batman is mostly like gray, let's say, with the black bat and the black cape and cowl. Superman is mostly blue with a couple of red highlights and then the S. Isom is pretty muted in his color scheme. He's got like a dark brown orange and kind of like a dark, almost like denim blue sort of color, or you know, maybe like a navy blue sort of color, and it's just really the cross on his belt. There's nothing on his chest, no cape, no nothing. We'll get a little bit more into the character design. I do have some criticisms with the design, but I like that simplistic approach, right? It's immediately recognizable. I think the only thing that would maybe help it, and maybe it's a little self-defeating because of perhaps the faith implications that go with it, maybe make the cross a little bit bigger, right? So it stands out a little bit more, you know, get that Texas belt buckle sort of thing going. But overall, I think the character designs are really good. I think the story is decent for a character-centric arc that just kind of develops Isom as a person. So you understand the wavelength that he operates on. And the art, you know, I've seen some criticisms for the art, and I have to disagree. As much as I am a fan of like a more modern art style of like Jim Lee, or even the more manga, anime, Japanese-inspired art that you see in like a Common America or something like that, or the very almost like printer-perfect artwork of Matt Weldon on Soulfinder, I find this artwork to be very reminiscent, again, talking about the cover before, very reminiscent of old school comics. It really feels like I'm reading something that could have come out of like Silver Age Marvel or DC. And I like that. It has a very old school vibe to it, the way the characters are drawn, the way the backgrounds look and everything. It's not super hyper detailed, but it's also not very blank and bland. Like, you can tell what things are, and it's not sort of just a blank slate and say, oh, use your imagination. But it's also not so hyper specific that there's not room for you to interpret certain things visually in your head. So I do have some criticisms, though. Again, I wanted to be honest with this, right? As a fan and wanting to see this succeed, I do want to be honest here. I think there's an emphasis right now on world building over story. There's no real focus on the Jasmine storyline. It's focused on expanding the world, and I think comics work best with new heroes when it comes to grabbing your attention to the hero first. Give me the character. Give me an exciting story. Give me something that makes them stand out immediately instead of building the world around them. And then leave people with questions at the end of that first issue or first arc, and then use the next arc or two to world build around them. In both issue one and issue two, and this was a big gripe of mine personally, we have these random appearances of Alpha Corps and Yara, and they feel out of place and unneeded, that are literally just there to tease at future projects that Eric has going on in the Ripperverse. Now, don't get me wrong, I love the fact that he's got Chuck Dixon writing Alpha Corps. Chuck Dixon is one of my favorite comic book writers. I have gushed over Chuck Dixon on this channel numerous times. Nightfall is one of my favorite one of my favorite Batman arcs. I think the road to No Man's Land itself, and Chuck's involvement in those was fantastic. Bane is one of my all-time favorite villains. I really enjoy Chuck Dixon's work. I am really excited for him to write Alpha Corps. But These two appearances feel so just on the nose, unneeded, right? Like, in the first issue, Yara's flying through the sky after running she runs into the Alpha Corps, or she's doing something, I don't remember what, but then the Alpha Corps gets called because they're like a superpowered hand of the police, basically. Isom gets thrown into Yara as she's flying, and then she throws him to the ground into a car. It felt unneeded. And then it's never brought up or mentioned again, right? And then in this issue, we're going through, and I'm like, okay, good. Maybe we'll kind of skip some of this stuff. And we cut to the Alpha Corps in what I'm guessing is their hideout, and they are examining a digital file on Yara, basically, and having a conversation about the whole thing. And there's clearly a past between them and Yara. And then it cuts back to Isom and the Jasmine story, and then, you know, Sam being missing, and then eventually into the Hohelian story. Yara never makes an appearance. The Alpha Corps never shows up again. And I just left myself going, it would actually be better for the storytelling purposes. Now, I haven't run two multi-million dollar, you know, Kickstarters. I haven't even gotten my first book published yet. I'll get to that in a second. So far be it from me to give any sort of, like, this is what you should do to somebody who has had that level of success. But to me, from a storytelling perspective, I think it would be better if it was tighter by just nixing those, right? You could have easily had Yara in the first issue be something that shows up on, like, a news clip or is talked about, you know, in like a radio thing, something like that, right? That kind of gives you this hint of this broader world of accepts without having this unnecessary tie-in that really doesn't add to the story, doesn't, frankly, in my opinion, really even add to the world as far as the world as we conceptualize it so far exists. And I personally find this to just be something that holds the book back. Even though it's relatively minor, because it's only a couple pages in both issues, it is something that I found to be very distracting. But Chuck Zixson writing Alpha Corps, you have my attention with that. I could also see the lack of a focus on the narrative deterring readers to some extent. And what I mean by that is character examination arcs are great, but even that should be more focused and not used to world build. It should be used to deep dive into the character, right? Like when we see why Isom quit. This feels like an expansion of the Ripperverse as quickly as possible to introduce more, which on some level is fine, but I wish the focus was more on Isom and his story and the mission at hand from start to finish. And just to give a parallel example to some degree, in the Dawn of Justice movie, we have Batman fall asleep while randomly looking at files for Aquaman and Wonder Woman and the like, and then he has this vision of the Flash and everything, and everybody was left scratching their heads going, what was the point of this? It kind of feels like that. And I'm not saying that this is as bad as Dawn of Justice is as an overall work. I think this is much better than Dawn of Justice, but it feels like that. I said before the Isom outfit is great in its simplicity, right? Batman, Superman, Green Lantern vibes. It kind of does remind me of Green Lantern now that I think about it. But it doesn't really grab. The colors are very muted to me. The dark brown, dark orange, there's nothing really eye-catching about it other than the cross on the belt. And I would wish, like I said before, I wish the cross was a little bit more displayed. Make it perhaps a different color, or if the cross is a darker color on top of a much lighter color. But, you know, I do kind of get the some old school Luke Cage vibes from the suit. I do enjoy it. I'm not trying to make this sound like it's a nitpick. I'll be honest. This is kind of a nitpick, but it's just my honest opinion. I'm not trying to shit on the book. I like the book. It's just an honest thing there. And sometimes the art is a little off. There are a couple of panels, actually a handful of them, where the facial features feel too small for the faces. The pencils and the coloring almost kind of muddy together a little bit too much. And the one criticism I really do have of the art, after praising it I did before, is its weakest part is actually the action scenes. It feels very static, whereas you don't really have any sort of blur lines of moving, you know, with speed or anything like that. You don't have any sort of after image effects to kind of convey the movement that's going on in this really rapid, quick succession. It doesn't capture that life. And it feels like when I'm looking at the fight scenes, it literally feels like I'm looking at a flip book sometimes. Which is a shame because I'm a bit of an action junkie, and it's very clear what's going on in the fights. Again, the art is not bad, but it does feel a little static in those. And I'm sure that over time that will get better. I'm sure over time the storytelling will be more concise once the world is developed. But those are just some honest criticisms. So overall, would I recommend this book to people? ISOM 2 and ISOM 1. Would I recommend the Ripperverse? Yeah, I would. I think that it is harkening back to an era of comics that we all wish we had. But it's not doing it just in the storytelling, right? Common America does it in the storytelling. It feels very, like, positive, dare I say, wholesome sort of, you know, comic positivity and heroism. But it's got that new school veneer of mixing the Western style with the Japanese style, and it feels very modern in its artwork. Whereas this feels more classic in the artwork with that classic storytelling. And in that regard, I feel like it's very accessible. And I don't say, a lot of times people associate the word accessible with negative, and that is not true at all. Accessible means that this is the kind of book that if you've never read comics before, and you were looking to start at the ground level somewhere where things kind of are not so self-evident with how comic book logic works, these are good books to start with. And that to me is a plus. Remember, Metallica was many people's gateway metal band before they got into stuff like death metal or black metal or anything like that. That doesn't make them bad. It means that there's something to it that can attract both the hardcore types and the newbies. And I think that's a positive. I recommend this book to people. I think it's a good book. I would love, and I know he's probably not going to hear it, but Eric, if you do happen to listen to this just for some honest reviewing of your work, I would love to be able to eventually sit down and talk with him and ask him some questions about what the goals and motivations are, without spoilers, of course. Talk about the design choices. Talk about some of these things that I have questions about that I'm sure will be revealed later. But I would also love to know, like, it's clear that his philosophies influence the book, but it does not beat you over the head the way modern Marvel and DC does, where it's very ham-fisted, like, oh, you should feel this way, or, you know, Barbara Gordon joins a BLM riot outside Jim Gordon's office, because reasons, I guess. It doesn't do any of that. It's clear that Eric wants to encourage people to be self-reliant. It's clear that he views that as a form of heroism, which I personally agree with. And it's clear that if you look at his Twitter, if you look at his YouTube and everything, it is clear that he is also not afraid of competition. He just wants to publish his works, and he is actively many times encouraging as many people as possible to create something. Again, a sentiment I happen to agree with. I have tried numerous times to get works of mine published in the novel sphere, and it hasn't worked. And I'm trying again, because eventually you might hit gold somewhere. And he's hit gold out of the gate, and I think that's fantastic. And he doesn't discourage people from competing with him, because frankly, competition makes everybody in that sphere of competition better, if I'm being perfectly honest. So I really recommend the book. I think ISOM is good. I think the Ripperverse is good. I'm looking forward to Alpha Corps. Admitted Chuck Dixon fanboy, so call that what you will. I think he's doing good work. So that's my honest review. If that upsets you, oh well. Sorry, it's just my opinion. I'm just some grunt on the internet that uses like little Grim Reaper avatars in place of his real face. So take my opinion for what you will. But there it is. ISOM number 2, somewhat number 1. That's our official review here over at American and Clown Corps. I'm HVK. That's all I got. The end.